Welcome back to Issues Etc. Here in the second hour of the program, we're going to start some audio open lines. Bill O'Reilly has been going, I don't know, it's probably been a year at least, that he's been going after George Tiller. He's a late-term abortion doctor in Kansas. We finally got around to an interview with Dr. Tiller. We'll be playing that here for you in just a moment. Get your reaction to it, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. A little bit later, a CNN story on using goth and rock music to attempt to boost church attendance in Great Britain. You know, there's a desperation that sets in when churches are convinced that they're dying. Who is it who says there's nothing like your imminent death to focus your attention? But in the church, it's often kind of a pathological thing, a desperation, a fear. Here's Jesus on the one side saying, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it, saying to those seven churches in the book of Revelation again and again and again, be faithful unto death, and I'll give you a crown of life. He doesn't say, you know, you guys aren't desperate enough. You guys aren't... If you really wanted members, you'd just try anything and everything. Well, they're trying goth and rock music to boost church attendance in Great Britain. We'll see how it's working out for them. There's also a CNN report on a video game that's staged in a famous England cathedral. It's a violent video game, I understand. And we'll see what you think about that in a CBS story on Bush's visit with Pope Benedict. The two most powerful men in the world, I'd say, gathered together. What does the President of the United States need to say to the Pope, and what do you think Benedict should say to the President as they meet together? I mean, they obviously are two men with a lot to say and two men of vast influence. How do you think that conversation should go? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for June is called Reading the Psalms with Luther. Now, it's simply a book of the Psalms with Luther's introductions, brief introductions to each and every psalm, pointing to Christ in that psalm. It's a great devotional resource. It's $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Find out more at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Ask them about reading the Psalms with Luther. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 13th of June. Bill O'Reilly finally got an interview with George Tiller, the late-term abortion doctor in Kansas.
Confronting the Kansas doctor known as Tiller, the baby killer. Dr. George Tiller has performed thousands of late-term abortions for millions of dollars, and some Kansas authorities suspect he is violating the law because some of the women involved do not have serious medical reasons for the late-term abortions. Psychiatrist Paul McHugh was asked by former Kansas Attorney General Phil Klein to examine some of Tiller's records.
I didn't think that those records supported the idea that these women were likely to suffer a substantial and irreversible impairment, which was required by law here in Kansas for their abortions, since they were late-term abortions. They highlighted certain kinds of things which, out of context, were hard, of course, to appreciate, but were sometimes of a most trivial sort, from saying that I won't be able to go to concerts or I won't be able to take part in sports, to more serious ones, such as I don't want to give my child up for adoption.
Remember, in Kansas, late-term abortions can only be performed if there's irreversible damage, physical, to the mother. Now, because of the seriousness of this situation, we asked Dr. Tiller to comment. He would not. So Factor producer Porter Berry went to him.
Why are you one of the only doctors who does these kinds of abortions?
Nice day, isn't it?
They call you Tiller the baby killer. Is that appropriate?
I think I'll get in my car and go to work.
Dr. Tiller, don't you think...
Hi, is this 911? This is Dr. George Tiller. I am at Edgemoor and Harry, after a quick trip, I'm being accosted by the people from O'Reilly. And they are preventing me from getting in my car and leaving.
But you can get in your car and go, Dr. Tiller.
Well, the Kansas legislature passed a bill saying that Tiller had to provide the state with specific medical reasons for all his late-term terminations. But Governor Kathleen Sebelius vetoed the measure. Joining us now from Kansas City is Dr. Brian Russell, a psychologist and attorney. All right, you heard what Dr. McHugh, and he's a Harvard-educated guy, and there's another psychiatrist who backs him up. Says Tiller aborted late-term fetus in 31 cases where a woman said, women said they had major depression, 10 more cases of acute stress. These are not irreversible physical damage to the mother. There doesn't seem to be any question that Tiller's violating the law here, and there's no question of medical privacy either, because the names have been redacted out of all of this. So why is Tiller today still performing late-term abortions in Kansas?
Bill, this is the most unbelievable case I've seen in the practice of psychology and law. We have late-term abortions going on in the state of Kansas because women are upset about things like not being able to go to concerts or not being able to participate in rodeos. And we have an attorney general who seems like an otherwise reasonable man who is hiding under his desk and behaving in ways that are difficult to understand until you follow the abortion lobby.
No, this is not the attorney general. This is Klein, who is voted out. The attorney general you're talking about is Paul Morrison.
That's correct.
Now, I want you to stop and think about this for a moment, because while you might say, look, George Tiller in Kansas is an extreme case. I know that's those of you who sit on the fence on abortion, that's exactly what you're saying. Not every abortionist is unscrupulous. Most of them follow the law. Most of them seriously regard the laws in their state. And most of them would never think of either violating the law or performing late-term abortions. We're talking about late-term abortions. For reasons other than the weightiest, heaviest reasons that a woman could present. Well, think about it. How do you know that to be true? You're simply assuming that a person who would perform a late-term abortion in the first place is scrupulous enough to say, but you know, that's not a good enough reason to perform a late-term abortion. In the case of Dr. George Tiller, no reason seems to be too light for him to do this, and he's willing to stretch the, at least his interpretation of Kansas law, irreversible physical damage to include just about anything. Now, you say that's an extreme case. I say not. Not every abortionist is like George Tiller, but these laws that say, well, you know, this is a restriction on abortion or on late-term abortion, are often simply interpreted however it is most convenient for the abortionist or for the woman seeking the abortion. Take, for instance, the health exception. How long did we debate in this country before finally, months ago, we got a ban on partial birth abortion? And people would call this program or email this program saying, but you don't understand. These abortions are only performed to save the life of the mother. Which displays either profound ignorance about what a partial birth abortion is or willing ignorance about whether or not a woman is really has her life in danger. Why? Because partial birth abortion requires the delivery of the baby. Now, if a woman's life would be threatened by the normal delivery of the baby, it seems a little more risky to have a normal delivery of the baby, at which point the child is killed. The safest way, I've often said, is why not just bring the baby completely to term, give birth, and then have the doctor take the baby into the next room and dispatch the baby there, rather than when the child's head is still in the birth canal. If we're talking about risk to the mother's life, there is no circumstance in which a woman could bring a child to full term in order to have it aborted in the last few seconds of birth, but not bring the child to full term. But we debated that for probably close to a decade. Why? Because a lot of the so-called restrictions on abortion are just really fig leaves to cover lawmakers saying, well, we've restricted some things here, when in fact, in an actual interpretation, there's no restriction at all. And don't forget that for 34 years now, what Dr. Tiller is doing in Kansas has been perfectly legal in the United States under Roe v. Wade. Let's get your reaction to what you're hearing on the O'Reilly Factor. He doesn't want to talk to the reporters, and others are saying this. They can't even explain what's going on in Kansas. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Audio Open Lines this Wednesday, the 13th of June. It was about a year ago, a political pundit someplace wrote this book, What's Wrong with Kansas? And it was all about Middle America and how Middle America it's all the red states and it's all these crazy conservatives and evangelicals, and painted a picture of Middle America as though it were a bunch of toothless evangelical voters who have knee-jerk reactions to issues like abortion. Lo and behold, here in Kansas, this Dr. George Tiller acts with impunity, and at least the government there is unwilling to stop him when he stretches Kansas law and restriction on abortion to the point of incredulity. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Look, Morrison is a political player, all right? He's going to follow Sebelius's lead, and Sebelius is the one that's protecting Tiller, because remember, the legislature, as I just mentioned, passed a law, a separate law, that demanded that Tiller hand over the irreversible damage medical data that would have legally allowed him to terminate late-term fetuses, and then Sebelius vetoed it. Now, that is, to me, unbelievable.
It's unbelievable to me, too. She shouldn't have vetoed that thing, but Morrison is the one now who has the power, independently of Sebelius, to decide whether to proceed with this investigation and file charges like former Attorney General Klein did, or to drop it. And so he's the one who's got the ball right now, and he's the one that we're waiting to see what he's going to do with it. He's in a very tenuous situation politically, Bill, because he won his seat by convincing the voters of the state of Kansas that this is some kind of witch hunt and there was some kind of privacy invasion on the part of former Attorney General Klein. Now that he's in office and he actually has access to the records, he can see how serious these violations truly are, and so he's in a tough spot now, because if he goes ahead with these charges, then he's got to basically say that he was wrong throughout his whole campaign.
What should the Kansas attorney do? The Kansas attorney, as the reporter here says, the ball is in his court. Not reporter, actually, a medical school professor, I believe, saying the ball is in his court. What should he do? Apparently, the governor doesn't want George Tiller to be held accountable for the abortions he's performed or are likely to perform now, tomorrow, the next day. Apparently, any reason, in spite of what the Kansas law reads, any reason a woman wants to proffer to him for a late-term abortion, he considers to be irreversible physical damage. So what should the lawmakers and those charged with enforcing the law in Kansas do about George Tiller? I want to hear from you. 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. If it were happening here in St. Louis, if it were happening on the east side of the river or where you live, what should law enforcement, the governor, the attorney general of the state do about an abortion doctor who apparently has never met an abortion he doesn't like or is unwilling to perform? Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850.
If he drops him in the face of such overwhelming evidence, and there's really no medical debate about this, Bill, I concur completely with Dr. McHugh that if there are reasons being given, like acute stress disorder because somebody can't go to a concert, there is just no justification for
that. Yeah, I don't think people understand that they brought in McHugh, Dr. McHugh, and a couple of other guys, all MDs, all psychiatrists, to look at the reasons why Tiller is aborting late-term fetuses, who are viable fetuses. And some of those reasons, as you stated, were, I was upset because I wanted to go to a concert and my pregnancy interfered with that. I was upset because I wanted to go to a rodeo and my pregnancy interfered with that. And he still went ahead, this guy Tiller, and aborted the late-term fetus.
Now, even it's hard for me to imagine, but maybe I'm naive. Those who are just whole four square in favor of abortion on demand without any restrictions would consider it ethical, would consider it something they want to support, abortion for any reason, period. You know, there are plastic surgeons out there. They used to call them plastic surgeons. What do they call them now? I can't remember what they call them now. People who do cosmetic surgery, cosmetic surgeons maybe. There are people performing cosmetic surgery out there, which is generally elective, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, it's something you don't have to have. You won't die if you don't get your nose job or your liposuction, your Botox. Who will tell their patients no? The more scrupulous ones will, won't they? Now, we've all seen the product of a cosmetic surgeon who won't tell his patients no or a patient no. We have famous examples of people who have found doctors that will do any cosmetic surgery you want them to do without any concern about your well-being or your sanity, for that matter. And we're talking about people who straighten your nose or give you chin implants or whatever it is they're doing nowadays to make people look better or younger. And even in that profession, which society could do without for the most part, society could do without it. I mean, we wouldn't be that worse off if we were a little uglier or looked our age. Even in that profession, as relatively trivial as it is, the vast majority of plastic surgeons will say no to someone when they think that their reason for wanting this is nonsense. Why is it that if abortion is just like another medical procedure, why is it that abortion is exempt from this kind of common sense concern? Now, right, if you believe that the unborn child is not a child, is a lump of tissue of no consequence whatsoever, of no importance whatsoever, then I suppose you're being quite consistent. George Tiller, all abortionists who say that that's what they believe about the unborn child should be doing what George Tiller does. I mean, that's what I thought when I listened again and again and again to Bill O'Reilly talk about George Tiller. My question isn't, why is there this one apparently unscrupulous abortion doctor in Kansas? My question is, if the abortionist and the supporters of abortion really believe what they say they believe, that the unborn child at every stage of development is nothing more than a potential life or a lump of tissue or a cluster of cells or whatever they want to say it is, why aren't they all like George Tiller? Why aren't all abortionists doing abortions all the way to the end of a woman's term for any and every reason? Why even ask for a reason? Come on. If we really believe that the unborn child is not a child, not a human being, not a person, but just a thing of no significance. Or, for that matter, maybe you take a different tack. Maybe you say it is a baby, but the woman's right to choose trumps the baby's right to live. That's what a lot of pro-choice people believe. The woman's right to choose trumps the baby's right to live, if the baby even has one. Now, if you really believe this, if you really truly believe that, then shouldn't a woman's right to choose trump the child's right to live? Period. Why any restrictions whatsoever? Why any need to give reasons? Why isn't every abortion doctor like George Tiller? If it is merely elective surgery, like I'd like to have the fat sucked out of my thighs or something, no more consequential than that, then why isn't every abortion doctor like George Tiller? Plastic surgeons generally probably sleep easy at night with no guilt about what they're doing. They realize, look, the world could do without my profession, but I'm here to provide a service, and what I do is perfectly ethical. If there are no more ethical concerns about abortion than there should be about elective cosmetic surgery, then why isn't every abortionist George Tiller, doing abortions for any and every reason, or no reason for that matter? I'm just asking a question of consistency. I would think that the advocates of abortion, if they were consistent, would want every abortionist to have the mindset of George Tiller. They would not be shocked or even taken aback in the least at the actions of George Tiller in Kansas. He is simply doing what he's been trained to do legally. He's simply doing it according to the stated beliefs that most people who support abortion say they believe.
Now, in the state of Kansas, it says clearly that a doctor cannot do that unless there's irreversible harm to a woman's physical health. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Physical
health.
Two
physicians, Bill, have to concur that if the abortion is not performed, that the woman will either die or suffer substantial and irreversible bodily harm. And in none of the examples that I heard yesterday from Dr. McHugh, and I was there when he was talking in person and I've reviewed the tape a number of times, I didn't hear one example of a mental diagnosis that was going to cause irreversible substantial bodily harm to anybody, and that couldn't be treated in a myriad of other ways besides a late-term abortion.
Now, I think we all know what this is. And if the state of Kansas doesn't stop this man, then anybody who prevents that from happening is blood on their hands, as the governor does right now, Governor Sebelius.
All eyes are on Morrison.
All Americans, no matter if you're pro-choice, pro-life, whatever, should be getting in touch with Governor Sebelius' office and saying enough, because this is just a disgrace.
You know what? Let's say it again. What George Tiller's doing in Kansas is perfectly legal under Roe. There may be restrictions in the state of Kansas, and people quibbling about the reasons for which he performs abortions or the reasons he thinks are permissible in performing these late-term abortions. But it's still, under Roe, apart from those restrictions, perfectly legal. This is precisely what the Roe court envisioned. George Tiller. That's what they envisioned. Abortion on demand at any stage in the pregnancy. That's what the Roe court envisioned. Oh, and by the way, if we overturn Roe v. Wade, guess what happens? What happens is what's happening in Kansas in all 50 states. What happens is each state gets to sort out how much they're going to restrict abortion. Whether they're going to say no abortions at all, we might see that in South Dakota, Mississippi, who knows? Or whether they're going to say, well, only abortions in the first trimester or the first and second trimester. But those third, we won't allow them. Or like Kansas, we'll allow it in all three trimesters, but you really have to get over a pretty high hurdle to do that third trimester abortion. Even if Roe goes away, that's where the debate is headed. That's why this is very important. We'll be right back with more Audio Open Lines right after this.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Here at AM 850 KFUO, we thank God for blessing our founders with the vision and wisdom to embrace broadcasting as an evangelism resource long before people owned radios. You have to wonder what legendary broadcaster Dr. Walter A. Meyer would think of worldwide KFUO today, serving local listeners with a high-definition signal and reaching the ends of the earth with streaming audio via the Internet. We do know one thing he'd recognize as being the same: our commitment to communicating God's saving grace through faith in Jesus Christ in all of our programs. If you share the vision of our founders and want to continue fulfilling the Great Commission through Worldwide KFUO, here's a personal invitation for you to become a charter member of the AM 850 KFUO Founders Club. Your support will go a long way toward making sure KFUO continues to be a reliable resource to people for years to come. We'll even invite you to our annual Founders Club dinner.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Texas is sounding an alarm on sexual predators as it considers adopting Jessica's Law.
an edict that ensures stiff penalties against child sex offenders. The state is also considering the death penalty for child rapists. But in 80 to 90% of child rapes, victims know their attacker. Often it's a relative. Will a child report the crime, knowing it could cost a loved one his life, and what psychological damages could ensue as a result? Josh Montez reports.
Nearly every state has passed some form of Jessica's Law, but only a handful, like Texas, want the death penalty for child rapists. Richard Dieter with the Death Penalty Information Center wants stiff penalties for child offenders, but he's critical of the death penalty because of what it might do to the psyche of children who are already victims.
Putting all of this burden on children, saying, you know, your memory is going to result in the execution, I think is a big mistake.
Mark Klass with the Klass Kids Foundation agrees the death penalty is extreme, but he says it fits the crime. His daughter Polly was raped and killed by a child offender in 1993.
Anybody that would be capable of raping a young child would be capable of almost any kind of a heinous crime. And individuals that have determined that they're willing to step over those boundaries have to be taken out.
Ernie Allen with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is in favor of the death penalty for those who victimize children in the most heinous ways. But he admits it's never an easy discussion.
But we don't think this is the kind of thing that can be applied without very close scrutiny and real discretion by the court.
At the end of the day, he believes the death penalty needs to be an option. For Family News in Focus, I'm Josh Montez.
Five states have the death penalty for child rapists. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
AM 850 KFUO is underwritten in part by Reliable Heating and Cooling.
Reading the Psalms with Luther is our issue.
AM 850 KFUO is underwritten in part by Reliable Heating and Cooling. 8463 Delport Drive. The folks at Reliable Heating and Cooling remind you that during this in-between season, between the extremes of winter and summer, it's generally easier to arrange for a service checkup on your furnace or your air conditioner. That tip courtesy of Reliable Heating and Cooling, 8463 Delport Drive, a corporate underwriter of AM 850 KFUO.
Where do we find Jesus in the Psalms? Reading the Psalms with Luther is our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June. For more information, look for the cover of Reading the Psalms with Luther on our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Did you know that the Psalms portray Jesus as our mighty fortress, our shepherd, and our light? Reading the Psalms with Luther, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June.
Well, coming up next on Audio Open Lines Issues, Etc., there's a CNN story. Churches are using goth and rock music to boost church attendance, or at least to make it an attempt to boost church attendance. If the kind of soft rock of the 1970s, which is the standard fare of music used to boost church attendance here in the States, if that isn't working, you know, maybe we do need to try some other styles. Like goth, or some heavier rock, not the soft rock, but some heavier stuff. What do you think of churches using goth or rock music for Christian worship? I was over the weekend listening to the radio, and I heard about a church here in the United States, an Episcopal church, that's decided, and it's doing this along with a lot of other Episcopal churches. They're doing what they call the U2-charist, I believe, using songs from U2 in their services. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Having a conversation years ago with a pastor, and he was talking about how they decided to change the worship in their congregation and go to what he called contemporary, but it still is kind of 1970s soft rock, varying from somewhere between the Carpenters and maybe the Eagles. But there's nothing hard in there, okay? It's still, at least in terms of what's on the radio today, what the youth are listening to nowadays, it's still easy listening for the most part. He was talking about how they've made this move, and a fellow pastor said, well, how far are you willing to go with that? And he said, well, as far as we have to go. And at the time, the alternative form of music out of the West Coast was grunge. Nirvana, you know, this music that isn't around anymore because all of the people who played it are dead from drug overdoses. It was grunge. So he asked, well, how far in the future is a grunge service at your church? Will you do the grunge service if you need to? And the pastor with a straight face said, oh, yeah, we will if we have to. We'll do grunge if that's what the people want. Now, this church is still doing the easy listening soft rock somewhere between the Carpenters and the Eagles. Still, that was 15 years ago. So apparently they haven't felt the need to go grunge just yet. Now, if your pastor makes a suggestion to start a goth service on Sunday morning, or for that matter, rock, I mean real rock, Aerosmith, Van Halen, Linkin Park, for those who listen to more contemporary music than I do, at your church. Say in the next voters' assembly, he stands up and just says, we're going goth. How would you react? Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. And our call-in numbers, 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. I mean, look, with all this music comes a certain genre altogether. Goth isn't just a sound, it's also a look. I drop my daughter off at high school, and I see the kids that are called the goth kids. Black jet black hair, black attire. Some of them have their faces somewhat pale, on black lipstick, eyeliner, everything. Girls and boys. Think Marilyn Manson. You know who I'm talking about? Marilyn Manson is the guy who looked like he should be laying on a slab in a morgue someplace. He performs, I think they call his shock rock, but it's close enough to goth for the conversation. I mean, it certainly won't be that assorted group of people standing up at the front of the church of varying ages between 15 and 65 singing to the soft rock music anymore. It won't be. It might even look a little bit more like Marilyn Manson if it's goth. And churches in England are trying it because they want to boost their attendance. So I want to hear from you after we hear this story from CNN.
In one of England's most venerable seats of learning, you might be surprised to find a darker side of religion. With church attendance in decline, especially among the young, the Church of England is offering a service tailored to a generation who feel that the church has little relevance.
I wasn't a regular church guy. I was when I was younger, probably up until early 20s, mid-20s. And I sort of drifted a little until I've started coming here rather more regularly.
The Goth Eucharist was created by the Reverend Marcus Ramshaw, who wanted to tackle issues sometimes avoided by the church, like depression, self-harm, and sexuality.
I'm going to start off preaching about transgendering. Is it sinful to change sex?
But it's not to everyone's taste.
People had visions of it being something which was, what about Satanists, or you know, naked virgins on the altar, or black masses. Goths are a scary bunch of people who wear dark clothes, black makeup, and are normally misrepresented in the press as being a bunch of dangerous, scary people, when actually they're quite the reverse.
Well, it may not be a regular church service, but at least among this goth community in Cambridge, it's turned some people into regular churchgoers.
Goth services have now spread from the UK to Seattle and on the campus of Yale University in the US. But if the Goth Eucharist isn't for you, then there's always the U2charist. Coming the other way across the Atlantic It's a service based on the music of Irish rockers U2. They don't just play the CDs, they perform the band's songs. And the congregation sings along. The Reverend Paige Blair, an Episcopal priest in York Harbor, Maine, started the service for one reason.
Reaching the unreached, reach people who are outside of the church but who still need to know the message of God's love for them, then what better way than to use the music that's really part of the soundtrack of their lives?
Goth Eucharist, U2charists, and there may be more like them, as various parts of the Anglican Church try to help those whose lament is, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Adrian Finnegan, CNN, Cambridge, England.
Okay, so you have your choice between, say, a Marilyn Manson cover band or the U2 cover band on Sunday morning. I mean, that's what it's going to be if you have the U2charist. It's going to be the U2 cover band, probably those really cool red sunglasses that Bono likes to wear. I mean, other people have a hard time pulling it off. Bono does, because, after all, Bono is Bono. But if you have your choice between the U2 cover band, the goth cover band, I mean, for that matter, name your style of music. And your pastor says, this is what we're going to do. They've tried it in England. They're doing it out in Seattle. We're going to try it here. As the one pastor there who does the U2charist said, she said, what better way to reach the unreached than to use music that is already the soundtrack of their lives? How would you react? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's Audio Open Lines this Wednesday, the 13th of June. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. What I want to know is, when Bono goes to church, does he go to a church where they do the U2charist? And if he does, it's just kind of a strange picture for me. It's like that picture of the guy staring into the picture of the guy staring into the picture. If Bono goes to church where they do the U2charist, how weird is it for him to participate in a service where someone's covering not only his music, but really him, too? I'm just thinking out loud
here.
That's
what I thought, too. What's Bono's take? I'd like to know what Bono thinks about using his music, which is used as secular music.
Now, you're touching a nerve there with a lot of people, you know, because there are a lot of people who consider Bono's music to be kind of next to the Bible.
Well, I don't think he would.
That's right. That's why I asked the question, what kind of music does Bono have where he goes to church? Because people can choose whatever they want, right? I mean, you can choose whatever you want. If I want to find a church where there's a Garth Brooks cover band up there, or a Dixie Chicks cover band, or anything like that, I can probably find it. Because after all, that's the soundtrack of my life. The soundtrack of my life is country music. So if I want to find that, I can find that. Now, there is a reason why on Sunday morning I don't seek out churches that are just playing the soundtrack of my life. It has a little something to do with the fact that my life is part of my problem, not part of my solution, if you know what I mean. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. So there's goth, there's rock, U2, I guess I would call that rock. Oddly enough, no big band, no flapper services going on anymore. There's still people around for whom that is the soundtrack of their life. I mean, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, very likely the soundtrack of their life sound a little bit more like, well, for that matter, why? I mean, we could go highbrow, we could go lowbrow, you can go any direction with this. There are people for whom the soundtrack of their life is opera, other kinds of classical music, gangster rap. I mean, there are lots of people for whom the soundtrack of their life is literally gangster rap. Because if goth is okay, rock is okay. And we're really here about giving people the soundtrack of their life on Sunday morning. Are there any lines to be drawn? Now, that I mentioned talking about that pastor some time ago, 15 years ago, and he said no lines. But oddly enough, his church is still doing the soundtrack from about the late 70s to the mid 80s. That's about where their soundtrack still is. It's audio open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Remember right after September 11th? For a brief moment after September 11th, and I think Bono and Oprah are vying for kind of high priest of the of this post-September 11th religion, civil religion. You got Bono and Oprah kind of arm wrestling for who's going to be the high priest or priestess of American civil religion after September 11th. But it was right after September 11th, Super Bowl Sunday, halftime show, U2, and all the names of the victims of the September 11th tragedy were scrolling on the giant Jumbotron there. It was down in Florida someplace. And U2 was singing one of their songs. Oddly enough, you know what Bono was doing when he was like walking to the stage to get to perform the halftime show? You know what he's doing? He was reciting the opening of Matins. Did you know this?
Of what?
Matins. O Lord, open thou my lips, and my mouth will show forth. He didn't. That sounds like that's more of the soundtrack of his life. You know, maybe his music is so very profound because the soundtrack of his life isn't his music. But maybe, I don't know, crazy idea, the Word of God, something like that.
If a church says we have to do this type of worship for, let's say, the baby boomers, because they don't resonate, they're not their grandfather's church, and they don't resonate with the way their grandparents and their parents worship.
But their parents weren't worshiping with big band music.
Well, I know.
And that was the soundtrack of their life.
I know, but I'm saying once your church goes down that route, how can you not say goth, rock, soul?
Gangster.
If you really want to reach as many people for Christ as possible, shouldn't you be having just any format that you have on your local radio station?
I'm thinking techno, the kind of music that you'll have in the clubs, endless mix. Dance mixes of pop music, Britney Spears, Avril Lavigne, gangster rap. You know, one of my favorite movies is a funny but also crude movie. And please don't email me about it. It's a cult classic. Is Office Space, and I watched the movie a couple times before I actually realized that the entire soundtrack of that movie is really really dirty gangster rap. I mean, hardcore. Bad, bad, bad gangster rap. Well, I was kind of watching the movie and following the plot and thinking it was funny. But, hey, that's the soundtrack of somebody's life. It really is.
Hey, Todd, I'm not defending U2 here, but do you remember when Time magazine put them on the cover after they did the Joshua Tree?
I don't remember.
And I think the cover said Christian rock and U2. I think that's what this U2-carist congregation is kind of related to.
So what we've got a group like U2 that is arguably crossover Christian in the culture, always has been. When I was in college going to college with all these Christians, blaring out of every dorm room, the soundtrack of their lives, Bono's voice. And they liked it because Bono's a Christian and Bono was saying kind of quasi-Christian things. And if it's the soundtrack of your life and that's what Sunday morning's about, why not? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org.
I'm looking at some of their top hits.
All right.
With or Without You.
Mm-hmm.
So we just, take our girlfriend out and replace Jesus with that? We think about Jesus? Or what? Sunday Bloody Sunday. It's a Sunday worship Sunday. It's about the conflict in Northern Ireland. We'll just apply that to Sunday morning worship. Or,
well, you know,
how about Desire? How about Desire? Is that appropriate for Sunday morning worship? Desire.
Hey, don't sing. Don't sing. We will get hotlined by Chuck when you start singing. Really, don't sing. Okay, let me regain my composure. Thank you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I mean, the U2 Christ has taken... Now, this is actually... I don't know if someone's getting copyright. I don't know if Bono's getting any royalties off of this, but the U2 Christ actually takes very popular U2 songs and puts them in various places into, actually, into the form of the historic liturgy, and then it just becomes the soundtrack of the liturgy. And a lot of this is tied up with the fact, of course, that U2 is perceived to be that quasi-Christian or Christian-esque voice in the world of rock and roll, and they're wildly popular for decades around the world, and Bono is cool. He's kind of the face of the cool Christian out there. What do you think about it? Along with that comes goth services, rock services, and soon, or coming soon to a church near you, perhaps hardcore gangster rap services. Because it is, after all, the soundtrack of someone's life. And we wouldn't want to leave anyone out. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Up first, here's Sharon calling from her car. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I was just wondering, why should the soundtrack of Sunday morning be the soundtrack of our life? Because Sunday morning is our service, you know, service, and it's God talking to us. Why should that be the same as what I do the other 6 days of the week?
Well, you've raised a good question, Sharon. In fact, I think the question that you're really asking is, why should Sunday morning be about me? As opposed to, I think, what it's supposed to be about, God. Is that what you're asking, Sharon?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Right, it's the soundtrack of my life. I don't know how we deal with this because everybody's got a different soundtrack. I was telling my daughter, she thought this was just so quaint and funny. I was telling her that when I grew up, and this was early 70s, early 80s, when I was in my, you know, those years when you listen to all your music and when all of your musical tastes are ultimately formed. I had very eclectic tastes in music, but no more eclectic than the average teenager out there. And when we were very early adolescence, the big thing to do was to have a song. It was your song. And at the time, Elton John was very popular. One of his songs was My Song. And it wasn't, by the way, your song. It was a different song. And I won't tell you what it is because it's embarrassing. And my daughter thought this was funny, that everybody had a song. And if, in your little group of friends, you couldn't have the same song as your song that someone else had as their song. So people would get into, it sometimes came to fisticuffs about who would have this song as their song. And the smartest kid in the group always got the album first and decided that the single off that album was going to be his song, and then nobody else could pick it. This is the kind of things adolescents do. But think about it. Those songs formed the soundtrack of our respective lives, didn't they? I mean, for many people, songs like, let's talk about Elton John again, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. They hear this and it's their all of their adolescent and childhood memories with all of those emotions come flooding back, and it really is the soundtrack of their lives. It means something to them. And if Sunday morning really is about you, then of course it really ought to be iPod Sunday morning, where you just go in with your individual iPod and plug it in and listen to the soundtrack of your life. Because you couldn't possibly gather a diverse group of people on Sunday morning and play one kind of music or one set of songs and have it be the soundtrack of all of their lives. You might hit a few of them with their favorite songs. Why not take requests? I mean, there's a radio station here in St. Louis that plays music from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and now, that does nothing but take requests. Nothing but take requests. Why not Sunday morning? Take requests. Matt in New York City writes this via email. Uwe Simonetto is justifiably upset that the American church is dividing itself into mutually exclusive country clubs What better way than pop music to ensure that everyone else in the church looks exactly like you? It's true. Jen in Las Vegas writes this: I vote for the church that plays everything to Bach. We listen to a lot of classical music. That's the soundtrack of her life, after all. I prefer the Russians, but she says she loves Bach, too. I could handle a church that played a lot of Bach, even sung a few cantatas. All that aside, she says, doctrine follows practice. So I'm not in favor of all that stuff. The liturgy is time-tested and biblical. I'll stick with that, and we'll walk out of a church that changes it and won't change back. She says she does like Bono's music, too, but not in the divine service. Maybe that's what we're really talking about here. People saying, look, if it can be the soundtrack of my life at the drive-in and in the car as a teenager and at the parties when I was in college, if it can be the soundtrack then, why do I have to leave my music at the door on Sunday morning? I think that's really it. People saying, why do I have to leave my music at the door on Sunday morning? Why can't I bring it in with me? Which, I'll come back to this again. I really think we are headed for that point when, instead of corporate singing, like a bunch of people singing hymns, or even a bunch of people listening to the same praise band, we are perhaps no more than 5 years away from an iPod service, where when it's time for the music, everybody listens to their own mix of songs for 20 minutes. Individual headphones, and actually if you just stand there in the church, it will be completely silent, while everyone has their little earbuds in, listening to their own mix of music, whatever the soundtrack of their life is, during that music segment of the service. Our call-in numbers and audio open lines continues after this. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 13th of June. Well, coming up in November, the 4th through the 6th, right there in the first week of November at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, they're going to be holding an annual event called the Good Shepherd Institute. It has very little to do with the soundtrack of your life. It has more to do with the soundtrack that is God's Word. It's called the Good Shepherd Institute. It's for lay people and for pastors as well. You can find out more about the Good Shepherd Institute at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, November the 4th through the 6th. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, or give them a call, area code 260-452-2100, 260-452-2100. When we come back from this break, we have more audio open lines. I'm asking the question about, well, based on this CNN story about the church in England that's using goth as the new soundtrack for Sunday morning, how would you react to this? Is this a good idea? A little bit later, we'll get to a story of president meeting together with the Pope for the first time and find out from you, what do you think the Pope should have said to the president? What do you think the president should have said to the Pope? We'll be right back.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues, Etc.